Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 54 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. Well, today we're going to be talking about, well, how to kick it up and get intense. About what? I'm not telling you yet. You got to wait for that one until I tell you who sponsored this already. This episode comes to you care of Prevention, they've gone ahead and partnered with Premier Protein to kick off their Spread the Health Healthy Habits Challenge with 6 monthly blogs and videos to show you how simple it can be to implement real, lasting change. You'll love the topics, too. And they start with, move. Boy, talk about timely. Nourish, grow, relax, and balance. Run on over to prevention.com/content/spreadthehealth, as well as #spreadthehealth. Learn more. And to learn more about our wonderful segment and to share the wealth, please, after the segment, run on over to iTunes and give us a nice rating and a review, because we really welcome your thoughts, love your feedback, and yeah, I really read these things too. All right, it's time for Her.
Her, the podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind, her body, her life. It's all about Her.
All right, so we call this Kick It Up and Get Intense. What's this all about? Raise your hand out there in Her podcast land if you've ever heard about high intensity interval training or HIIT. Well, yeah, I thought so. Well, today we're going to hit it in a big way. And that is with one of the great researchers in this field. He's been called a guru, but I don't think he likes that. I think he's joined by so many excellent people and scientists out there, but boy, has he been a leader in this field, and that's Dr. Martin Gibala. Now, he's a professor and chair of the kinesiology department at McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario. His research on the physiological and health benefits of high-intensity interval training has attracted immense scientific attention and worldwide media coverage. He's published more than 100 peer-reviewed articles, the results of which have been featured by outlets including the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Vox, CNN, and it just goes on. He's been speaking all over the world about this, and I cannot begin to tell you how happy I am right now to have my friend and colleague, Martin Gibala, on the Her podcast to talk about his brand new book. Yeah, you heard it. Brand new book. It's called The 1 Minute Workout. Yeah, the 1 minute workout. You heard me right. And we're going to be talking about what that's all about. This book is fabulous. And I don't just say that lightly. This book is so rich. It's got so many mind-blowing new scientific facts that you need to know. Tired of 3 hours on the treadmill, walking at zombie, pace? I think we've got an answer here. All right, Martin, welcome to the Her podcast.
I'm excited to be on the show. Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, now, how'd you get hit? One of the segments in your book said, how I got hit. So what happened? Why did you get inspired to do this in the first place?
I had a professional and a personal interest. The professional interest is I teach a fourth-year course called the Integrative Physiology of Human Performance, and my students are always interested in the training programs of elite athletes, in particular elite endurance athletes. And so we would talk about how these athletes train. And the students to this day remain fascinated by the idea that short, hard bursts of exercise, which we think of as an anaerobic type activity, can really enhance aerobic performance. And so if you go back through history, at the turn of the century, there were Finnish Olympic athletes winning middle distance races, and they trained almost exclusively using hard sprints. Roger Bannister, very busy medical student, when he was making the assault on the 4 minute mile, he would train for about half an hour on his lunch using 400 meter repeats. And so that was always fascinating to the students. On the personal side, when I first started teaching this course, I was a young assistant professor at McMaster. My wife is a working teacher. We had two young children. And so ironically, as an exercise physiologist, I was finding myself with not enough time to exercise. And so I thought, maybe some of this stuff you're talking about in your class, you might want to try that on your own. And so that those two influences dovetailed into a line of research that's going on 15 years or so now.
I love it. I absolutely love it. And, you know, as per usual, all great research is, you know, got a little personal background to it, too. And I loved listening to, you know, your reality blast of, yeah, I'm busy, too. Because I think there's a stereotype that so many people like yourself and experts in the fitness arena, you know, just spend all day long at the gym. They're just hanging out. And they don't have real lives. And you do. You're a family guy. You're a busy professor. You've got so much on your plate. But somehow, you're able to pull it off. And there you have it. So for all those people out there, right, who've been, have gone through the long era, I have, I'm sure you have, of believing that the longer, the better. Even if you were doing it hardcore, the longer, the better. That surely, you know, an hour on a treadmill or running or something is so much better than just 20 minutes. And so for the consumers out there in America who are still stuck on that, I got to do an hour on a treadmill or an elliptical or a fill in the blank. For all of those people out there, right? How do you begin to lure them to this brand new way of thinking?
I think, and let me say from the outset, there's nothing wrong with the public health guidelines, obviously based on tremendous science. And so our book and our line of research is not at all meant to say that we should scrap that approach. And, you know, I'll often see it presented as an us versus them issue. So intervals versus traditional cardio. I think we need to take a step back and first of all recognize that whether it's true or not, the number one cited barrier to exercise and regular activity is time. A lot of us lead very busy, time-pressed lives. And so the notion of if I don't have 45 minutes or an hour in the day, I can't get in a good quality workout. So you tend to blow off exercise. If I talk to my behavioral colleagues, health psychology experts, they will say, we need to give people more menu options, more exercise choices that they can pick from that fits within their own life. And so if there's one thing I've taken away from interval exercise, it's the concept that intensity trumps duration. So how hard you work out is more important than how long you work out, especially when it comes to time-pressed individuals. And as I also mentioned, there's many different flavors of interval training. Some people think it's only this all-out, as hard as you can go, gut-busting type exercise. Certainly that's one approach, and it's highly effective, but it's clearly not for everyone. And so I think there's a version of interval training that can almost be applied to anyone, and you can bet that it's going to be more time-efficient than the traditional continuous moderate approach.
And I think that there's a gender specificity to this too. You tell me from your own research, but what I hear from women is, oh my God, I'm so afraid of intensity. Now, I'm not talking about elite athletes. I'm not talking about Lindsey Vonn. I'm not talking about, you know, people who just, you know, let it rip every single day. Just, you know, average women who are just trying to get in that minimal amount of physical activity. Intensity is almost like a guy thing. I'm kind of going out on a limb here a little bit. But if you go to a gym, who's sweating all over the floor? Who's grunting? Who's making all those noises? You know, it tends to be the guys. And so the women are much more likely to kind of keep it to themselves and not go quite so hard. I'm curious. I mean, clearly there's a generational thing here, too. I think younger women are much more inclined now to let it go out and rip, the millennials and others. But I still think there's a big segment of women who are really a little fearful of it.
In our studies, we've definitely tested both sexes. In fact, some of our studies have been exclusively conducted on women. For a while, we were thinking there might be some sex-specific adaptations in interval training. And so if you look at a number of studies, including some of the work from our own lab, for example, some of the improvements in blood sugar control or insulin sensitivity in some of our initial studies didn't appear to be as great in the women. And now that might be for some important reasons. Maybe it's as simple as we weren't comparing the men and women properly. And so we've done some more recent studies where we've, for example, tried to match their initial fitness. We've very carefully controlled what phase of the menstrual cycle when we compare individuals. And so I think the important takeaway from our research is that clearly both men and women can benefit from this approach. And probably the benefits are largely similar because these initial studies aren't being borne out with some of the more recent research. And from my perspective, it's probably more a highly individualized response. Some people prefer interval training more than others, but we haven't seen any clear sex-specific differences in terms of preference. And in fact, some of the women we get are our best subjects in terms of giving her.
Well, heck yeah, we are. I'm a little biased, but you know how that goes. Well, so define high-intensity interval training. It's one of the biggest questions I always get. It's like, what exactly do I do? Is it just, you know, I mean, clearly it's relative to everyone. So I'm a senior Olympic triathlete. All right, so what's tough for me is real different than someone my age who's fairly sedentary. So how we're going to define that level of intensity has to be, you know, customized and individualized. But define what it really means.
Sure. So let's start just with interval training, which really just means alternating periods of relatively intense exercise with periods of recovery. And that recovery could be complete rest or lower intensity exercise. So just this idea of hills and valleys. High intensity interval training to me generally is defined as exercise that elicits a heart rate of 80 to 85% of maximum, but not necessarily all-out exercise. And so if you get into this literature and you study the science of interval training, it's really an alphabet soup, and there's so many acronyms and names out there. No wonder it's confusing even for scientists, let alone the average person. And so in terms of interval training, you're seeing two broad categories. High-intensity interval training, which, as I said, is 80 or 85% of maximal heart rate, but not all-out exercise. And that's distinguished from sprint interval training, which is just that, going as hard as you can go, an all-out pace, or at least an intensity that would normally elicit your maximal oxygen uptake. So you can think of sprint interval training as the more extreme variety, and high-intensity interval training is more that intermediate variety. And when I say intermediate, somewhere between the typical public health guidelines around continuous exercise, but not quite all-out exercise. And most of the research has been focused on this high-intensity interval training variety, and that's the type of approach that's been applied to not only healthy individuals, people with metabolic syndrome, type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease. Our focus has largely been on the sprint variety because it's so time efficient, but again, it's not necessarily for everyone. But if you look at the literature as a whole, that's broadly how you can start to categorize the various aspects.
So how long, you know, another question, I'm going to be, I'm channeling the consumer here. These are the million questions I constantly get because I'm a complete high-intensity interval training fanatic. And I've followed your work. I love it. And I was just fell off my chair with glee when your book finally came out, because finally we can really spread this message. So, you know, one of the biggest questions is, you know, from people, just men and women together is, gee, do I have to do all kinds of mathematics and figure out what 80% of VO2 max is and, you know, all these things? Or can I just sort of kick it up, you know, and make up my own thing as I go along? I notice in your book, you said that, you know, many times you'll just sort of go down to your exercise area, your fitness area, and you just sort of make something up. And then you'll just sort of follow kind of a blueprint for that. How can someone out there begin to take that first step and figure out, now this is assuming, of course, you know, they've seen their, you know, they've asked the appropriate medical provider if this is okay for them, and that if they have any disability or impairment, you know, that they've checked out with the appropriate people, how to be able to work around that and what they can tolerate. Let's say that that has all been taken care of. Now you're just going to go out there and try this. How does someone sort of begin to dip into this brand new arena?
Our first message is, just get out of your comfort zone. So everyone has a pretty good notion of where they are right now. And so it's push out of that comfort zone for you a little bit. And what I mean by that is your heart rate up a little bit higher. The perceived exertion is a little bit higher. You might be a little bit more out of breath, or maybe it's a little bit more difficult to talk to your exercise partner. And so if your only exercise is normally walking around a block, an interval session for you is picking up the pace for a few light posts and then backing off. And as simple as that sounds, this gentle type of interval training, if I can call it that, it's been shown to be beneficial. So for example, if you compare individuals who have type 2 diabetes, and one group does this gentle interval walking, just picking up the pace and backing it off, as compared to continuous steady state walking, interval walking has been shown to be more beneficial in terms of boosting fitness, reducing body fat, and in particular, improving blood sugar control in people with type 2 diabetes. And so in the book, we call that the beginner workout. And then we take you through 12 different strategies, going from the least intense version to the most intense. But you can really use perceived effort or perceived exertion as a guide. And so again, we try to provide some tips in the book by having individuals consider intensity on a 1 to 10 scale, and the interval sessions or the intensity demanded, it might be a 3 or a 4 to start out, and then you gradually push it up, whereas if you're talking the 1-minute workout, that's demanding a 10-plus effort, so as hard as you can go, but the exercise is very short. But I think you can get a long way with this idea of perceived exertion, and when you're just starting out, the message is, get out of your comfort zone. Don't try to be a hero and go 0 to 100. Get out of your comfort zone to start, and then you can build from there.
All right. Then the next question people then would say is, for how long?
Clearly, there's this intensity.
I'm hanging them out here for you here, Martin.
You know what? There's this intensity duration trade-off. And so the more intense, the less exercise you can get away with. But for example, a workout that we've tested extensively in the laboratory is something we call the 10 by 1. So that 10 1-minute effort with 1 minute of recovery. So start to finish, it's a 20-minute workout. 10 of those minutes, you're pushing hard. And when I say hard, maybe about a 6 on out of a 10-point scale. And so again, the more intense you go, the shorter the workout can be, and you know that you can still reap benefits. But those are sort of the sliding scales, intensity and time. That's basically the trade-off.
I see. Okay, so Jane Doe or, you know, John Doe out there who wants to try this, right? They'll look at their own baseline level of fitness. And this could be someone who is utterly sedentary right now and just wants to get up and start moving and make it happen. And other people who are in fairly good shape but want to kick it up. I think one of the most important things you said was get out of your own comfort zone. As I always say, change happens outside your comfort zone. And, you know, and that means all the beneficial health changes, clearly, no question. But I think people are now just beginning to wrap their heads around, I think, the wonderment of it all. Is it really true that you can actually get all of these health benefits, you know, in a workout that's more intense than half the time that you spent normally? I think a lot of people are kind of almost in this disbelief, like, nah, that can't be right, let alone a 5-minute workout, let alone a 1-minute workout. So go ahead, convince them.
Let's start with that 1 minute workout. And again, I recognize this is the extreme, but then maybe we can go from there. We've done a study where we've compared the 1 minute workout to the traditional approach. And so everyone is clear, when I say the 1 minute workout, it's really a 10 minute time commitment. So it involves a warm up of 2 minutes, a 20 second as hard as you can go effort, a 2 minute recovery, a second 20 second hard effort, another 2 minutes of recovery, and then a third and final 20 second effort and a few minutes of cool down. So start to finish a 10 minute time commitment, but within that 1 minute of very vigorous exercise. We've compared that approach to another group who is doing 50 minutes of continuous exercise. And we followed two groups. They both trained 3 times a week for 12 weeks. So basically a 3 month comparison. One group, the interval trainers, they had a 5-fold lower time commitment. But despite that, anything we measured after the training, both groups improved by the same extent. So same improvement in their cardiovascular fitness, same improvement in their insulin sensitivity, which is that measure of how well the body uses blood sugar, despite the fact that the interval trainers were spending 5 times less involved in the exercise. So some striking comparison data are available now to really, I think, make this point that, yes, this type of interval training can be extremely time efficient. We've done other comparisons as well where the intensity is not as great. And again, this is where the trade-off comes in. You know, you have to extend the time commitment of the intervals if you're not going to be working as hard. But I think it's safe to say there's really robust data now that a wide variety of interval training protocols have been shown to elicit benefit very similar to the traditional approach, but in less time.
Oh, boy. Okay, so now we're going to talk about the Holy Grail. The one question I get asked, just as many times as I get asked about what is HIIT in the first place, weight loss. Okay, so, you know, again, people have been really cultured to this whole issue of you've got to really kill yourself out there for very long periods of time. You get this Biggest Loser kind of vision in your mind of the nightmare they went through, you know, doing all of that. And you're thinking to yourself, oh gosh, that's the only way to be able to shed pounds, etc. So tell us how HIIT figures into all of that.
Sure. A couple thoughts. Obviously, it's a lot easier to control the energy inside of the equation of what we put in our mouth rather than try and burn calories through exercise. That being said, intervals are a time-efficient way to burn calories, and it's because you don't only count the interval exercise itself. Personal trainers talk about the afterburn effect, or this idea of a heightened rate of metabolism or a heightened rate of calorie burning in recovery. It's a real phenomenon. It's often overstated, but we've measured it in the laboratory and shown, for example, that a 20-minute interval session can result in calorie burning over 24 hours that's very similar to a moderate intensity bout that lasts twice as long. So again, evidence there that intervals can be a time-efficient way to burn calories. But I'd also come back to the point, and I know all of us, you know, we want to look good, you want to look good on the beach or in your clothes. It's important for people to remember that there's a direct line between exercise and fitness. A lot of people think we exercise to lose weight, and that's what confers the fitness benefits. No, you know, even if you compare overweight and obese individuals versus normal weight individuals, if their fitness is the same, their risk of dying is largely similar. So yes, we do worry about calories and burning fat and everything like that, but don't underestimate the fact that fitness is a really important independent health marker, regardless of the number on the scale.
I think that that's so terribly important because a lot of people out there, Martin, are black and white. If I'm not working out like an Olympian, it's not even worth it, right? If I can't, you know, always have, and I quote, the perfect workout regimen, show up all the time at the gym, do my thing, then what's the point? The point is you can definitely become more fit, and by doing so, increase the health benefits that you've just mentioned. I recall Steve Blair's wonderful work at the Cooper Institute, where he was able to show, I think it was primarily in men, that regardless of BMI or body mass index, their level of fitness was an independent factor that was very powerful and potent in predicting their overall morbidity and mortality. And that was, again, independent of their weight. So, yeah, just get up there and do it. And I always say to everyone, you cannot, remember this, you cannot outrun your fork. So, you know, you can exercise all you want to, boys and girls, but if you're eating like there's no tomorrow, afterwards or before or both, you've just neutralized everything. So you've got fitness, you've got the weight management issue, all of it clearly ties together, but you've got to understand the role for each one. And one of the biggest gifts you've given us, Martin, with your book, The 1 Minute Workout, and your marvelous research, is that there are now new options. I think a lot of people out there are breathing a sigh of relief, knowing now they don't have to spend a year and a half on a, you know, with some piece of equipment, some cardio equipment, that they can really like pull it out there. You know, it's interesting. I inadvertently slipped into this when I ran the 2012 Boston Marathon, which, by the way, was the hottest one in history. Thank you very much. And when I did it, I'm a sprinter by nature and by DNA. I don't know why I've ever done any endurance, but oh well, I guess the medal's better. And I ended up for the first time training more in the sprints and in those kinds of exercises. And I wasn't the one putting in the 300 miles a week type. I just tend to do more of the sprint stuff. And I experimented a little bit, and I did this with Jeff Galloway, who was basically my coach for this. I have never had that much fun with a marathon, and I was fully prepared. And it just absolutely amazed me because it affected my performance, it affected my body composition, and I felt absolutely marvelous despite the fact it was 93 degrees. And it really works. And I'm a really firm advocate of this for health's sake, because this most definitely improves your metabolic profile. All, you know, anyone out there, whether you're just at high risk or you already have the issue right now, and come on, you know, we're all time starved, every one of us. We're all trying to find a way to crowbar in that 5 minutes to be able to get in anything, exercise and our sedentary lives and back and forth. Dr. Gabala, in his wonderful book, The 1 Minute Workout, has gifted us with all kinds of options, and they're all science-based. This isn't coming from left field. This is something that I always push. You know my reputation. You know I come locked and loaded with great science, and let's apply it. So I think that everyone out there needs to start to look into this. Get the book. Start learning how you can just ramp it up right now. You make it as simple as possible. Take wherever you are and then just push outside your comfort zone in intervals. I think is a marvelous way to do that. Does that make sense, Martin?
It does. I like to think of it, you know, there's only so many ways you can jump on a treadmill and jog at a moderate pace for 45 minutes or an hour. With intervals, there's infinite variety. And, you know, we're often asked, what's the best interval workout? Well, there is no single best interval workout. Obviously, if you're the elite athlete, you want to dial it into that in visual as much as you can. But for the vast majority of us, it doesn't really matter. And probably the variety is actually a very, very good thing. And so I get back to this idea of more menu choices, more menu options. And we like to say intervals provide a way to fit your exercise within your life rather than having to structure your life around exercise. And we're learning more about even the concept of exercise snacks. You know, we're conditioned to believe that snacking is usually a bad thing. We associate it with diet, but there's increasing research to show that perhaps three 10-minute exercise sessions spread through the day is better for you than a 30-minute continuous exercise bout at one time. And, you know, it fits into the whole problem of sedentary living. And so just moving more is important. But again, I come back to this idea that intervals provide infinite variety and, to my mind, more opportunities to fit exercise within your life. You know, we recently did a study that was just looking at stair climbing. So basically, people did the 1-minute workout on stairs. Lots of us work in office towers or live in apartment complexes. And so the stairs provide a really convenient option. And so we're interested in taking interval training out of the lab. Don't do it on these fancy bikes and equipment. Just apply it by ascending a few flights of stairs. And lo and behold, what we found was that the cardiovascular fitness benefits was exactly what we've shown previously on the bike. So it speaks to the message that it doesn't really matter what you do. There's lots of cardio style exercises that you can apply in an interval manner, and you can easily work these into your day using practical approaches.
I love it. Okay, now for the final little piece of this, oh my gosh, I told you I could go on forever with this book. You have a chapter entitled High Intensity Nutrition. What is that?
It's some tips we gleaned from a colleague of mine, Dr. Stuart Phillips, who does a lot of work, mainly the area of protein metabolism, but he's very interested in how nutritional manipulations, in particular, how nutrition and exercise can interact synergistically. And so some of his studies have shown that holy grail. You know, is it possible to gain muscle mass while losing body fat? And sure enough, Stu has shown that in a couple of his studies by manipulating proteins, a little bit higher protein intakes during periods of energy deprivation or when you're cutting calories a little bit, and as long as you're incorporating some resistance exercise there. So Stu and I have worked together for 15 years or so, and I thought he was a really good resource to lean on. It's not a diet book by any means, but really the chapter on nutrition provides some tips for some strategies that have been shown to be beneficial, at least for some individuals.
So you bring up intermittent fasting. Do you actually do that yourself?
I don't specifically structure my diet that way. I think clearly there's periods of the day when I'm unable to eat, but I can't say specifically that I'm someone who goes in and makes a deliberate attempt to intermittent fast. And, you know, I think while we're speaking about diet, the real important thing is here again, like exercise, you got to do what works for you. And so it's fine for me to sit here and say, for example, well, if you exercise on an overnight fast, that might result in a few more calories burned from fat when you exercise hard in the morning. But if you're someone who absolutely hates to do that, or you need to eat some breakfast before you exercise, then that message really doesn't mean anything to you or resonate with you. So I think it's a highly individualized approach. You need to do what works for you because you're more likely to stick with it over the long term, whether it's diet or whether it's exercise.
I think that that's really fair. You know, I'm very happy to hear you say that once again, we're going back to customize and individualize. That is absolutely critical because there's so much fadism out there. There's no question that there's very strong research behind a variety of forms of this non-feeding for longer periods of time. And that's sort of another subject. But I'm glad you brought it up because it's something that's now being really delved into much more deeply by groups like Salk and USC, the National Institutes of Health, and others, as we're beginning to understand that maybe the way we eat has to be much more customized, very much so the way we're doing the same thing with physical activity, which also means it's on us to do the homework for ourselves and seek out and and put together, create an A team of experts in our own lives who can help us understand what works best for us, given our medical history, our fitness history, our daily lives, and what are our patterns, et cetera. I think we're kind of pushing aside now a rubber stamp type of approach that I think we've been following for a very long time, certainly for common people, not for athletes, just for people on the street who are just trying to be healthy. So this adds a beautiful nuance to it. Martin, I warned you we'd be going over time. I just love this. I think we've covered, you know, most of the salient chunks of information in the book. I just want to make sure everyone out there understands I'm talking to Dr. Martin Gibala. He is professor and chair of the kinesiology department at McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario. The name of the book is The 1 Minute Workout. The 1 Minute Workout. And this is, the subtitle is Science Shows a Way to Get Fit That's Smarter, Faster, and Shorter. Thank you, God. And if you want to read more about this, go to the website penguinrandomhouse.com. This is his publisher/books. And then The 1 Minute Workout by Martin Gibala with Christopher Shulgin. Martin, I cannot thank you enough for gifting us with your time and your wit and your wisdom and the reality of this brand new way to be able to move our bodies more effectively.
I really appreciate the opportunity to be on the show. Thanks very much.
All right. Well, remember to catch every episode of HER. Just hit subscribe on iTunes on our show page at RadioMD.com. And then please take a moment, rate the podcast, and then leave us a review because I read these things and they're very important to us. I'm Dr. Pam Peek. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeekMD. And you can also check out our HER show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening and stay well.